This is a podcast from Love Sport Radio.
On this podcast, we don't shy away from getting down and dirty when it comes to talking life, lust and love. So throughout this episode, there will be strong language and adult themes.
You're listening to Wham Bam, It's Dr. Pam. Up close and very personal.
I'm glad you've joined me this episode because we are keeping it very real. I never give you BS advice like some programs. Now, I'm super psyched because, of course, I'm getting up close and very personal with actor and presenter Ricky Norwood in this episode, and we're talking life, love and large nipples. I'm also joined by dating coach Lady Nadia Essex, who will talk from the heart about that situation that led her to leaving her role on Celebs Go Dating. But have you ever wondered how someone in the special forces manages to have romantic relationships? I mean, how do they do it when they're gallivanting around the darkest corners of the world? Well, I'm asking an ex-SAS man all about relationships on the run. First, I've got an email from David, who's emailed drpam.co.uk. You can too, just look on my homepage. He says, "Hey Pam, I met the woman of my dreams 6 months ago. She really has everything. Amazing personality, and she's hot. She has a toddler from a previous relationship that she shares custody with her ex. I really enjoy being something of a stepdad too. But last week my girlfriend told me how before she had her daughter, she was a stripper. Her ex didn't mind because it was good money that she brought into their home. She told me when we were talking about our pasts, and I'm finding this hard to deal with. She could tell by the look on my face that I wasn't best pleased. She immediately got defensive and explained how hard it had been and that I shouldn't judge her badly. But I still find it hard to think of her stripping off in front of all those leering men, even if it was 5 or 6 years ago. We ended up having a big row. She called me unreasonable and old-fashioned. Am I? I never would consider going out with a stripper, and just part of me can't accept it. What's your advice? Thanks, David." Well, David, I know a lot of guys who would struggle with this, just as I know a lot of women would struggle if, you know, she started going out with a guy and he said, "Oh, I used to be in the Chippendales or something." But this is the crucial thing. You love this woman, and guess what? She's the woman you love because of her past. She, you know, everything that she's done in her life has shaped who she is today. Our past make us who we are now. And we wouldn't be that way without the experiences. So her amazing personality and the fact that you share so much with her, it's all due to everything she's been through. Now, what I want to say to you is to take can't out of your vocabulary. You say part of you can't accept it. No. You can switch around that negativity and you can say, "I can accept it." And you can take time and tell her, maybe it'll take time because you kind of have this old-fashioned view about stripping. But don't let it ruin your relationship if she'll forgive you at this point. Because it's unnecessary to feel jealous about her past or to feel threatened by the fact that she stripped for other men. It just doesn't matter. So I wish you the very luck, good luck, to find it in your heart to forget about her past, realize that she is the woman she is today because of it, and that you can move forward. And I hope she'll let you do that.
Wham Bam, It's Dr. Pam. Up close and very personal.
Now, it's time to get up close and very personal with a man I call my radio husband, the actor, presenter, and Celebrity Big Brother runner-up Ricky Norwood. Now on Twitter, he's at Ricky J. Norwood, and he's the man I also call Mr. Sunshine. Hello, Ricky.
How are you doing, Dr. Pam?
Oh, so much better for hearing your voice. Now, you know, Ricky, I love talking to you about life and relationships because you had a rough time 5 or 6 years ago. It became very public, yet you didn't give up and you emerged a stronger man. How did you do that?
In life, we all have ups and downs. And it, in my downtime, when I was on a downer, I had to kind of see where my strengths were at and kind of and go through it a little bit. And the biggest thing that helped me was my friends around me, and my girlfriend, who was like just super supportive. And when I had downtime, she was really kind of great at picking me back up and kind of going, no, it's okay, because I kind of live by a mantra, like everything happens for a reason. So if this has happened, then okay, we'll learn the lesson from it, we'll take the lessons from it, we'll pay the penance, and we'll move forward.
I love
So
that.
it was and so even like doing something like Big Brother was a big part of that kind of exorcism, if you want to talk about it like that. So,
Yeah, and you know what I love about this, and I met you before you went into the Big Brother house. We got to know each other, and I remember thinking, this man holds his head high. He had that very public stuff going on only a couple of years before I met you, and the fact that what you've just said is learn from things that go badly wrong for you, and move on. And you know what I find, Ricky? A lot of people end up just feeling bitter, or they feel, oh, I can't go out in public again. And that is such an excellent way of looking at it that I think you've got.
Yeah, it becomes an anchor, and you can't let it become an anchor, because it does drag you down and it keeps you down. So like
Yes.
you have to, like in anything, like in child, when you're parenting, parents out there that are listening, that they will know that your kid's gonna make mistakes. But it's whether they learn about it. The heater is hot, don't touch the heater. Then they touch the heat and they burn their hand. Well, okay, well, what's the
Yes.
lesson from that? So as we continue to grow, as we get older, there are many lessons in life that we still haven't touched upon. So things are gonna trip you up. Things are gonna make you stumble. It's up to you to kind of like realize it, recognize it, and kind of use it as a lesson, and use it as a strength. It then becomes a strength.
And the fact that your girlfriend, was there, as you say, and really kind of helped you at times. A lot of people, they break up the minute there's a challenge, a hurdle. And I think that's really important. And I wonder, is that just her nature, that she kind of is someone who, would stand by someone and who will help you see the best? Is that kind of her nature?
Well, yeah, it's in her, but like she saw more in me. So
Yes.
I put the weight of the world on my shoulders, and with like, 'cause I did start to suffer at that point with high anxiety. There was levels of anxiety, bits and pieces spiked, but I never recognized it until there was till it properly spiked. And so when that happens, I normally kind of go to the worst possible scenario in my head, and I'm like, okay, and I accept the worst possible scenario before it happens,
Yes.
and so then I'm like, okay, well, fine, well, let's break up, let's move, go our separate ways, let's do that, I need to do this, and I start going on the worst thing. But she was great at kind of calming me down, slowing me down, and believing in me. She was like, I know you better than any headline. I know you better than anyone, and I know that there's more in you. This ain't, there's certain things ain't that isn't you. And so she believed in me and what I kind of brought. So she stuck with me, and she helped me through.
That's
And
fantastic.
well, yeah, but it shows it. Yes, she has that in a heart, as a person. But at the same time, it shows what a real relationship is, when you've got to go through some tough times.
Oh,
Relationships,
exactly.
that happens all the time. Yeah.
Absolutely. We all face challenges. No matter how happy we are, we still have challenges in our relationships. Now, what advice would you give to someone who's made a mistake and wants to do better? As you say, you got very anxious for a time about it, but then you did learn and accept and think, I'm learning from this and moving on. But so what would you say to someone who's maybe right in the middle of maybe a crisis in their, relationship, or they've made a mistake and it's causing problems for them?
The first thing I'd say is try to be as honest as you can with yourself. There's a lot of times when arguments happen, or conflicts happen at work or something like that, at a defiance, you stand on the, you know, on the side of wrong sometimes, because you're going to stand your ground and you're not going to back down. And, you know, so out of pride, sometimes you'll stand, you know, sometimes way too strong. What I would say is when you're in the midst of a crisis, I suppose, or a little mini breakdown, or you've made a mistake and you're trying to do better, be honest with yourself. Be honest with yourself where you made the mistake. Be honest where you was wrong. Be honest, you know, what you thought at the time. Even you may have believed it to be right, but it's okay to say that you believed it to be right, but now that you see it is wrong. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, because it's so easy to get stuck in the blame game where you've made a mistake, but you look for anybody else to blame. And that happens in relationships all the time. I've spoken to people who say, oh, they just can never accept when they have played a part in our relationship problem, and they just blame me, that finger of blame comes out.
Yeah.
And I think you're absolutely right. Maybe at first when you've done something wrong, you're kind of like, it happened because of this, it happened because of that. But eventually you have to say, I did this. I have to accept it and move on. So big lesson.
You have to learn from it. Otherwise, you're not honest with yourself. If you think about it, generally, whenever you have a kind of rant with your friends, you know, and I'm talking very, very general. But whenever something's happened, you're like, well, she did this, she done that, and then she done this, and then she said that to me. And it's the same on the other side. He said this, he said that, et cetera, et cetera. There's never no kind of, when you're having that conversation with your friends, because you're putting across your version as well.
Yes, your version.
You don't ever really say, well, I did mess up there because I did, when I came in the house, I said this, which triggered her, or look at the mistakes that you made up into the argument or up into the conflict, you know? So, okay, let's say you have the argument, let's say you have the conflict, let's say you stay defiant, let's say that she goes her way, you go your way. Well, at least take 5, 10, 15 minutes, because you're going to be angry anyway. Your blood's going to be boiling anyway. Take that time to review the situation, look back on everything that has just happened, and kind of, if you was in the wrong, say you was in the wrong. There ain't nothing in a relationship by saying that you're wrong at something.
Yeah, it's a strength.
Male or female.
It's a strength. It's not a weakness. I'm always telling people this. It is a strength when you can hold your hand up and go, I'm wrong.
Right.
Now, I want to run an email past you, please, because you are an amazing Agony Uncle. We've done so much Agony work together. So let me read this to you. Please don't laugh, but I have a fetish for large nipples on women. They really turn me on. And I have a few websites that I visit. Well, Ricky, I've never checked those websites out. I don't know if you have, but there must be some large nipple websites out there.
Well, now we know they exist.
Yeah. I don't know where this comes from, but it is my thing. I've always been out with women who happen to have large ones. Problem is, I'm in love now with a woman who has tiny nipples, and it really affects me getting turned on. She's everything to me. And we have the best time together, but when we first had sex, I was really disappointed. The only way I get aroused is imagining she has large nipples, and I've told her I like it when she keeps her bra on, so it's easier for me to pretend that she has. I've told her that I find bras sexy. I don't want to upset her with the truth, and I don't want to lose her, but sex is important to me, and I can't seem to shake this desire for big, sexy nipples. Any suggestions? Thanks, Rob. Okay.
Wow.
Rob obviously has a fetish for big nipples. What do you have to say about that?
Well, we all have our thing, firstly, so there ain't nothing to...
Are you going to tell me your thing?
No, we're talking about Rob right now. But we all have our thing, okay? So there's nothing to be kind of ashamed of at all. Yeah, it's okay to keep it private as well. If you feel that you want to keep it private, fine. But don't feel like you're a freak at it just because you have a little thing. My thing from listening to it would be, how high do you rate love and how high do you rate the sex life? Because within the message, within the email that he sent, from what you just said there, Dr. Sam, is that he said, I'm in love with this girl, but she has small nipples. And he has this big turn on for big nipples, okay? So my thing would be, how high do you value real love?
Yes.
And how high do you value the sex part of the relationship and yeah. And the sex life, and then I suppose you can peel off and kind of go like, how important is this nipple size? How important is it to you? Is it something that you can get over? Like, because if you're in love with the girl, yeah. then you're in love with her heart, you're in love with her personality, you're in love with more than just her body. You know, you're in
exactly.
love with. You're in love with the way that she stirs coffee, you know. You're in love with, you know,
her giggle.
Loads of, her giggle, you know. And even a little frustrating thing. She might leave some hair on the stairs and you'd be like, oh my gosh, like seriously, sweetheart. But like,
is
you
she
have
shedding?
A little giggle about it.
Leaving
but
hair
yeah,
on the stairs.
You'll have a little giggle about it and even those little frustrations. So like if you're in love, those things really, you know, they don't really stack up.
Yeah.
But if you're in a place of kind of lust love, where you're kind of getting the feeling, but you're more in it for the sex.
Yes.
And
definitely.
then the nipple size equation is more important.
I know.
You
and
know what I mean?
I think that I think you've really hit the nail on the head there. And I think that's absolutely true. And the balance often goes when we're first in lust with someone, because it is being in lust. It's sexual chemistry. You ignite it in each other. And it's just so exciting to be around each other. Then these things matter more. But Rob really needs to get focused. The thing is, he didn't tell me when he sent the email how old he is. And I really like to have details like that. If he's 25 and saying this, I'm not so concerned. But Rob, if he's 35, I'm thinking, come on. We all have little, as you say, little fetishes and little things that arouse us. But you've got to give the whole of her a chance. And really, you have to start focusing on other parts of her that maybe arouse you in bed too. Now, guess what? I've been doing sex with fruit on the shows, Ricky. And in the studio,
okay,
I have...
Okay, that's a different show. That is a different show, Dr. Pam.
I've got two...
I didn't know that's what you're doing over there. Okay, all right.
Well, I've got two ripe peaches in the studio
right.
with me now. And I was just going to say... If you love nipples, even if a woman has large nipples, let's say that you're circling her peaches with your fingertip. When they spring to life, all nipples, you know, they get excited and aroused and they tend to go upwards, you know, outwards,
yeah.
and they tend to shrink in that way anyway. So, Rob, if you're going to get her excited and really get her nipples excited, they're going to look pretty much like large nipples do when they're excited. So just work on the different strokes you can do with right now. If believe it or not, Ricky, I'm caressing these two peaches as if they were breasts, and
awesome.
you can use all
getting some tips right now.
Yeah, you can do some little fingertip movements, like little raindrops around her nipples. They'll get very excited, Rob, if you're listening. And you can do smooth circular motions around them. And you can do S shapes, and you can flick them with your fingernails, all those things, and her nipples will spring to life, and you really won't be able to tell if they're that small or that large. But Ricky, I think you really hit it on the head there, and I think you're right. He's probably in that first stage where lust is more important than actual love.
And if that's the case, then he should break up with a girl and kind of find somebody that can kind of satisfy his real need.
Yeah, if he's
know?
Just into the sex thing right now. Or be honest with her and just say, you know, I've always had this fetish, but I find these other things about you very rousing. Because if she really is a really good woman and she's a great personality and all that stuff, you know, and if Rob is, as I say, if he's in his 30s or above, he needs to grow up a little with this and know that he's not going to find the perfect woman who also has large nipples.
Right, so, well, that's it. That's it. The next lady that he might meet might have the largest nipples, you know, in the world, but she might be a really bad person to live with and have a relationship with. You
bad
know?
Personality.
So,
big nipples,
yeah,
bad personality.
Well, maybe. I didn't say that.
Now, I want to ask you about first impressions, because often with first impressions, we often can't get the detail of like that Rob's talking about in his email. But first impressions are actually so important. As a psychologist, I know there have been so many studies that we make our mind up about someone in the first few seconds. And it's very often sometimes if we've had a negative first impression to kind of change that. And I just wondered how you are, like, Are you someone who really goes by first impressions, or do you kind of give someone another chance?
Well, obviously, first impressions, mean a lot to, I think, all of us. I think the way that you greet somebody, the energy that you greet somebody with, the handshake, looking people in their eye, we give off so much subconscious energy you wouldn't believe in just a greeting. So if you get a bad vibe off of a greeting, that might linger, and that first little kind of question about that person may stay in your head when moving forward with them. But of course, over time, some people are different. Some people are very kind of caged at the beginning.
Yes, they're
For
very
their for their own,
over-contained and they don't give a lot of information, do they?
for their own reasons. So they may have been hurt or betrayed or backstabbed by a friend or a colleague or something. So you don't know. So that they might be very caged until they can trust you, and then they start to open up, and then you can kind of, you can build on that first impression that you had, But I would say stay open. I would say listen to your instincts, but at the same time, stay open because, this is a crazy world, and there's always something that's troubling somebody. So,
Yeah, well, and thinking about first impressions and how I always say to people, in my date coaching, sort of people will say to me things like, oh, my first impression of him was he had like an awkward laugh or something. And I'll say, but don't you realize maybe he's quite shy and so he does have an awkward laugh. And I just get so frustrated because people tell me, when they're single and they say, I'm looking for love. And oh, yeah, I'm open-minded. And then they tell me, oh, the first impression. I mean, unless someone does something awful the very first second you meet them, fair enough. But that's so often not the case. Now, and this brings me to this dating research that was out recently about first dates. And Ricky, I want to run this past you. I want to get your thoughts on this. And it was about safer dating. And they surveyed a bunch of people, and it turned out that 49% of single Brits, men and women, feel compelled to stay on a date because they want to be polite, even when the date has made them feel uncomfortable. And I was really staggered. That's half of singles who are dating who would stay on a date, even when their date made them feel uncomfortable. So it's kind of once you've moved on from the first impression, you're sitting there over dinner. I mean, what would you tell someone? Would you say, oh, well, yeah, you have to be polite and you have to stay there the whole night? Or what would you say to someone like that?
I think that the stat is quite it's quite staggering, but in the sense that there's 51 or 50% of people that actually kind of get up and leave.
Yeah,
So
exactly. I would be one of them.
but the half that are kind of sitting there, I think that yes, there is a bit about politeness. The other thing is like, oh, okay, well, let me just get through it, and then I can get out of it, and I'll never call him or her again. If this first impression's on a date as well, like you said, sometimes it can be nerves. Sometimes
Yeah.
it can be a little bit of anxiety. It can be a little bit of baggage. So it's more in a date scenario. I think it's more what happens during dinner. Like once the person warms up, once you've both had like 5, 10 minutes to warm up to each other, how the rest of the night goes. And if it's not working, then it's not clicking, then that's simple. That's cool.
But to be
Certain
made to
guys
be
don't.
feel uncomfortable, that's kind of the next worst step. Like, I mean, this once happened to me when I've said this before. I married very young, divorced young, and then started dating. And I'll never forget. I'd been asked out by this very handsome kind of George Clooney lookalike guy who was a dentist, and he said to me, and there I was recently divorced, and he said to me on the date, and we just sat down. And it was like 2 weeks before Christmas or something. He looked me right in the eye and he said, I'm going to be in bed with you before Christmas. And I was like, screw this. Just because I'm divorced, it doesn't mean I'm easy pickings. You know how they say desperate divorcee and all that stuff. And I was like, thank you very much, but let's just leave it here. And he was absolutely stunned. And I just thought, if that's your opening line, I'm not going to sit through dinner with you. And I, just
But
didn't finish my drink. Went and
some
just,
guys are crazy, Dr.
yeah,
Pam.
I
But
just thought it was so
some guys
awful.
think, but some guys think that that works, and it might, it may have worked.
Well, if I had low self-esteem,
but
maybe I would have like laughed nervously and thought, okay, so this guy thinks this, but you know, it's not going to happen. But no, I just was not in a headspace. I was not going to take any BS from anyone, and I felt uncomfortable. And I just said, no, sorry, this is over. And he was like pretty much like a goldfish, like bop, 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 like what?
Oh my gosh!
But I didn't continue the date. And I really do think if someone's made you feel uncomfortable, it's on them. It's not up to you to sit there the rest of the date to be polite.
Yeah. I think if somebody's offended you or if somebody's pushed the line, you know, when you said uncomfortable, I kind of had the feeling of just not kind of getting on and being, you know, someone might be like a science
nervous,
you know,
or yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, so I was thinking more about personality, but if somebody's kind of crossed the line with you, like you don't have no obligation to that person.
Absolutely.
And it's their fault that they've put you in that situation.
I was going to say, and another statistic from this was almost a quarter felt concerned for their safety on a date in the last 12 months, actually concerned for their safety. That is scary. You know, another thing you're going to have to do is, you know, say, well, you know, meet in a public place, never meet somewhere isolated so that you do feel, well, I can leave and there are people around me and they can see me leaving, you know.
But you see, this is what we've spoken about, like, we've spoken about dating a lot over the years, but we've spoken about kind of like Tinder and, you know, I should say the online apps. Let's say online dating apps.
Yeah.
That makes life a little bit easier for me. The online dating apps, and you know, I know it is hard to meet people nowadays, and I know, you know, especially kind of connecting with people, it is tough. But some of that was in the safety of people, male and female, was in my mind when it comes to that, because it's just.
You don't know who you're meeting. You've got to use common sense. It's like if you went to a bar and met a stranger. It's the same thing. If you go online and meet someone and then agree to meet them, it's like you've just been in a bar and picked up a random, you know.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's really, 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 really tough. I just think there's a lot going on out there. And I think that there should be some type of guidelines, some type of steps. Some type of a panic button app or something like that, or a tracker app or a share your date app.
Your friends know where you are.
Yeah,
so choose, you know, somewhere public when you first meet someone from offline, you know, from online dating. You know, don't give them like your address just because you're meeting them. You know, they don't have them come to your home. Yeah, we have to all use those basic, really common sense safety things, but it kind of goes out the window for a lot of people when they're excited about meeting up from someone that they've met on an app, you know.
Yeah, or even like, you know, getting your friend to pick you up once the date is finished. So,
yes,
you know,
yes.
So,
good,
so,
good idea.
So there's a boundary set straight away in your mind, straight away, as soon as you've walked in the sense that, like a safety boundary, but in the sense that you can have a great time and it can wine you and dine you and you can feel the sparkles. But you know that come like 10:30, your friend's coming to pick you up, and that'd be a great date night. And, you know, and then you've got time to assess and reassess and see how the texting goes and how the call goes in the next couple of days and see if you want to meet up for another date. But
exactly.
Until you know that you can trust. But it's really tough, Dr. Pam, because I watched a documentary not too long ago about it was a guy called Stephen Port. I think Stephen Port he was, and it was a guy that was on Grindr, the gay
Tinder.
Dating app.
The gay Tinder.
yeah, that one, yes. And you know, he ended up becoming a serial killer. Like he ended up killing like four boys, you know.
Oh.
And that was embarking in like 2014.
Oh yes, I remember the court case. Yes, I know. Wasn't he a chef or something? Yeah. And these people would just meet. Yeah, you know. It's tragic.
This is it. I mean, I totally, you know, can understand like a fun hookup at 3 a.m, but you're meeting right, like there's so much danger out there. I don't want to scare anybody as well, because there's enough scary tactics
out there.
Now
that we've scared,
often, I do often think about it. Like, it is a little bit scary for those people that are out there on dating apps and stuff like that.
Well, I was going to say, now that we've scared everybody who's single and using dating apps, I've got another email I want to run past you, darling. Okay. This says, my wife left me 18 months ago, and I still can't get over it. We were married for 3 years when we lost our baby. Oh, my God, that's just horrible. We were both devastated, and after time, she said to me, I'd never supported her while she was grieving. I thought I was supportive, and I was grieving too. It was like she couldn't get past this, and she finally left. We had bad arguments about it. How can I get over this? I have no interest in other women. I don't talk to my mates about it because it's just not something we talk about. When we're at the pub, they always point out women I should go for. Obviously, they think a new woman would sort me out. What is the best way to get over a breakup when you know there's zero chance of getting back with someone? I really need your advice. Cheers, Tom. Oh, my God. Ooh, I mean, to go through a breakup after such a tragedy. And it just to say that he can't talk to his friends. I mean, Ricky, does that surprise you as a man? Or would you talk to your friends if you'd gone through a bad breakup?
Bad breakups are hard enough. But couple that with, like, kind of, you know, losing your baby, that, like, that's really tough. So you've got tragedy upon tragedy, you know.
Exactly.
Like, I understand that kind of Tom's heart must be jumping out of his chest most of the days, you know, like,
as a parent, I can't even imagine losing a baby and then going through this horrible breakup because you have not supported each other in whatever way you guys needed, you know. But what should he do? You know, it's this whole thing about men opening up about things like a devastating breakup. You know, he's had a tragedy losing his baby. Mm. Probably didn't talk about that with his friends. Now his friends are saying, go on, hey, there's a bird. That's what you need. You just need to go pick some up. What do you think Tom should do?
Well, let me deal with the breakup aspect of it, because the grieving side of it, I'm going to let you do that side, because that's tough. But let me deal with the breakup side of it for a second. So what I would say, first of all, is, again, be honest, be open with yourself about how the relationship went. And this ain't for nobody else but you, Tom, okay? So, like, be honest with yourself. Admit when you was wrong. See when you was wrong in an argument or in a situation. Like, try and take the best lesson that you can out of the wrong that was there.
Yes.
And then what I would say to you is also, you have to appreciate what good there was in that relationship. Yeah, you have to appreciate it, recognize it.
Yes.
And you know, if he's saying that there's zero chance, he's already kind of accepting that there ain't no reconciliation. So what he's doing is, all that's happening right now is that he's dealing with the turmoil inside of his chest, and he can't do nothing with that energy.
Because it's really he's hard not for him talking to anybody about it.
He's not talking to anybody, yeah.
What do you think he should do? Should he ask the person he considers his best mate, oh, can we just go out, you know, on our own for a drink sometime? Rather, it sounds like he goes to the pub and there's a group of them and they're all, you know, joking about women. Do you think he should try and get some one-on-one time with, like, his best mate or... and talk about the breakup
but what I would say is that it the speaking side is almost going to come later because the turmoil is happening within his chest and in his head. So what I would say to him is, like, there's a couple of things that he can do to kind of to help take control again, and what I would say is kind of know that, firstly, that you're not alone. It's tragic what's happened, and it's hard enough having a breakup with a lady that you're in love with, that you believe was the one, that you believe that everything that was ever written in the fairy books was going to happen for you and her. Like, know that you're not the only one that's ever lost like that. And I know that sounds maybe cruel, but it's almost, I'm just trying to let him know
that you're not alone. Other men
that
have
you're
felt
not alone.
This way.
And we've done it. And some have gone through worse and kind of gone over, you know, bigger hills and hurdles. Everyone's hurdle is their own, but, like, he's not alone, okay?
But what about opening that conversation with a friend?
Well, that's
because I think
that
he needs
to
talk about this.
He does, but I think that firstly, what he needs to do is kind of, like, he will get to talk about it, and I think he will. Like, I think that there is somebody around him, and there is one of his boys, and naturally it will come out. The reason that the guys are pointing at girls because they're thinking that's the best way to help him.
Yes.
What he needs to know is that even though they're pointing him in the wrong direction in his head, they're trying to help him. They're trying to say to him, I'm here to help.
And
so
that,
what I would say
that,
to him is that know that he's got that there.
Yeah, and that tells him that they are there in their own way for him. Ricky, I think that's amazing advice. And it's been fantastic to have you talking so openly about so much of your life and about and helping me with these dilemmas. Can't wait to talk to you again soon. People can find you on Twitter at Ricky J. Norwood. And I know you've got various editions coming up, so hopefully we're going to see you very soon on the screens. Or
fingers crossed, Dr. Pam. I'll let you know when I know.
Oh, thank you, darling. Speak to you soon. And one thing I'd say to Tom is I've supported a baby loss charity called Saying Goodbye for the last 6 years. Definitely look up their website. They've got a lot of advice for grieving parents, and I wish you the very best, Tom. In a moment, we are going to be finding out about relationships when you're in the SAS. How do you forge a relationship? As well as talking to Lady Nadia Essex, who's opening up to me about what happened when she had to leave Celebs Go Dating under a cloud.
If you have a dating disaster or an awkward issue you'd like Dr. Pam's advice on, visit drpam.co.uk. Drop her a line via the contact page. That's drpam.co.uk.
You're listening to Wham Bam, it's Dr. Pam, and we're talking undercover love now. My next guest is Phil Campion. He's a veteran of military operations in just about every conflict-prone corner of the world, both as a soldier in the regular armed forces, an elite operator, and also a mercenary. He now works as an operator on the private military circuit, and his book is Big Phil Campion's Real World SAS Survival Guide. I can't wait to read this because it highlights how the 21st century is fraught with danger and stress if you live my life. So who better to help counter everyday threats than an ex-SAS survival expert? I'm delighted to welcome him now. Hello, Phil.
How are you? You all right?
I'm very well. Thank you for joining me. And before I find out more about your book, how did you get into the SAS?
Well, I joined the army at quite a young age. It was something I'd always wanted to do. And then, you know, sort of like a fair bit into my career, I decided I'd like to have a crack at Special Forces. And you apply or volunteer to do selection, and then you pass selection, and then, you know, that's it.
And what sort of selection is it?
It's quite a vigorous selection, to be honest. It's renowned as being the hardest selection process in the world for entry into any force. And it's a rigorous 6 to 8 months regime of not getting much sleep and being beasted, basically.
Wow.
It's all right.
And did you always want to do something risky?
Do you know what? I've never really thought of it that way. I've always thought, like, I was never one for being sat in the classroom.
Yes.
I was always in trouble. I always sort of, like, wanted to be outside instead of being inside. And so, really, the forces was a great option for me.
And
I'd have liked to play football for England, but I was rubbish. So didn't leave much else open, did it?
You and a million other men would have loved to do that.
Yeah.
But with SAS and that, and so you, as you say, you get 8 months of sort of extreme training, and then you get a posting, or how?
Well, then you
next?
The way the Special Forces works in the UK is then you'll be part of the Special Air Service, and you'll go to your unit, and my unit is in Hereford, so you're based out of Hereford.
And you're allowed to tell me that and you won't be shot?
It's not really a secret. I mean, you pick up any rag nowadays, it'll tell you exactly where it is. I think you can get it on Google Maps.
So when you went into the SAS, were you in a relationship? Did you have a girlfriend or a partner or a wife?
Yeah, I was married.
So how much were you allowed to tell your wife?
He's been old saying that if you wanted to find anything out, ask one of the wives.
Oh, really?
You know, how much do pillows really talk? Do you know what I mean? It all depends on the truth. But, you know, they don't know anything, really. I'm joking. Do you know what I mean? It's you know, you don't tell them anything. They don't need to know anything. You know, it's very much a need-to-know basis with all the stuff that you do up there. Do you know what I mean? It's need-to-know.
So
if they don't need to know, they don't get caught.
So you're married and you're in the SAS and then you get sent off. Can you tell me like some of the places you were sent to, or is it still secret even though you've left the SAS?
Yeah, let's just say I went all over the place, you know, different continents.
Yeah.
So you know, I wouldn't be telling you know, I certainly wouldn't be saying to the missus, right, I'm off to so and so today. You know, it's not a job like that where you say to your missus, like nowadays, you know, if I'm going out, I tell my girlfriend, right, I'm off out, I'm going to such and such, I'll be back by such and such. You know what I mean? Because she actually cares, you know, and wants to see me back.
Yes.
When you're in the regiment, you can't do that. You can't sort of like say, right, I'll be out the door now, I'll be coming back then. In every instance, you know what I mean? If I could, I would, but if I can't, then you don't, do you?
So how did she feel about that? Was she one of these people who goes, well, I know all about the forces and I absolutely accept this? Or was that quite stressful for her?
No, I think, you know, it's part and parcel of it. You know, we spoke about it before I volunteered to go on selection. You know, I didn't sort of like say to her, right, I'm going on selection, shut up, you ain't got a choice in this. I explained to her what it was. I explained to her, you know, what the outcome would be. And if I passed, you know, chances and likelihood of me going away quite often, frequently, in fact, without her knowing what I was doing or when I was going to be back, would be part and parcel of the deal, you know?
Yeah.
In return for that, she got better wages, a decent house. Do you know what I mean? So, it's, you know, what does she want from it, you know?
Yeah. But, I mean, I suppose in your, what you call a unit when it's SAS?
Yeah.
So, in your unit, you were there married. There must have been guys who are maybe single, you know? I mean...
Yeah, of course there is, yeah.
When they come back to the UK and they've been to some horrible conflict somewhere, operating, you know, secretly, what do they do? Because there you had a wife and you could say to her, I'm going to do this SAS training. It's going to be like this. That's the way it's got to be, you know, because we'll have a better life for it. But, you know, you won't be able to know what I'm doing. But what about the guys who... you know, come back here and they want to meet someone and they, like, you know, all of us have that drive and they want to date someone. What's the guidelines for them?
You know, pretty much, without sounding too, it's suck it and see it. You know what I mean? You've got to pad your way into any relationship how you would, you know, any relationship in Civvy Street. The difference is at some point you're going to have the conversation where you say to them, actually, I do this. And, you know, you're not going to relinquish that information until you're pretty serious and know somebody well enough to relinquish that sort of information, are you?
Yes. So before that, so let's say they're dating someone a month or two and they've been back here and whatever. And then what jobs are they saying they're doing if they suddenly have to fly off for like a week? I mean, do you know what
people... You know, that's a conversation for them, you know what I mean?
So you don't know the cover stories.
Just about every bloke that goes on the pull in the country, it comes up with something different to what he is, I would imagine. Do you know what I mean? So there's nothing new in that for anybody, is there? You know what I mean? Everyone's a helicopter pilot once in their life, isn't they, you know?
Well, you say that, but there was just that big con in the papers a couple months ago where some guy had been saying he was a pilot, an actual airline pilot. He'd bought one of the uniforms and he'd conned like some poor women out of, you know, thousands and thousands of pounds, saying that, you know, oh, I need the money for this or that. But, you know, so yeah, hey, this
well,
is...
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, on the flip side of the coin, and this is no joke either, if I had a pound for everybody who told me they was in the regiment that they weren't in the regiment, or everybody who said they were special forces that weren't special forces, yeah, I'd be a rich man. They do say the balconies on the Iranian embassy were the biggest in the world because everybody was on them. Do you know what I mean? So the chances are, if you told a bird you was in the SAS anyway, she'd turn around and go, yeah, really? Nice one. Get on the balcony with your mates then. Do you know what I mean? it's not a one-liner you're going to dump into a conversation, is it? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So I guess at some point, and knowing what you know, so someone gets serious with someone back here in the UK, and then they have to say, okay, we're serious, I'm in the SAS, but I can't tell you what I do, but do you want to, like, get married? I mean, literally, I guess they have to have that conversation.
Yeah, like I say, you're not going to have that conversation until you're serious with somebody anyway. And, you know, some guys may very well still then not even tell them exactly what they're doing. You know, just, you know, I've got a job within the MOD where you can't be privy to what I'm doing all the time. Do you know what I mean? It's not, you know, it's veiled truth, isn't it? You know what I mean?
Well, now tell me about the book. So what can I expect from your real-world SAS survival guide?
Right, so the real-world SAS survival guide basically was something that I wrote, because if you looked at all the other survival guides that were on the market, they're all sort of like out to hunt for truffles in the Amazon. Well, as far as I've been on 1,000 planes in my lifetime, and they've all stayed in the sky. So that's not, you know, that's what they're designed to do nowadays. So the chances of you actually finding yourself in an Amazon rainforest, unless you intentionally went there, are quite small. However, the chances of you getting mugged at a cash point or being involved in a situation where there's some road rage or having an incident within your own home are quite high.
Okay.
So I just thought I'd try and cover a few bases for people, teach them how they could look after themselves a little bit. Because after a while, within my industry, you do a lot of this stuff naturally without even thinking about
it. Yes, you just have a radar for, you know.
Yeah, you've got a troublemaker on my ear, but I've got a radar which tells me when it's coming. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So, and can you, I've got to ask you this, because I trained in Shotokan karate. I'm a black belt. I haven't actually been to my dojo for about 7 years because I hurt myself in a skiing accident. But prior to that, I'd worked, you know, had been a black belt for nearly 20 years, and I had perfected my, you know, palm heel strike, just like if you've ever seen the last Boy Scout, Bruce Willis kills a man with a palm heel strike in one action. Can I ask you, can you actually do something like that with your training?
No, I'll just shoot you.
Oh, dear. Well, that's an answer for you. Well, listen, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much. And people can find you on Twitter at Big Phil Campion.
That's the one.
And your book, of course, Amazon, everywhere else. It's Big Phil Campion's Real World SAS Survival Guide. I am going to get that, Phil. Thank you for your
nice
time
one.
Today.
All right, take care.
You
Cheers.
Take care.
Goodbye.
Wow. I mean, so, hey. You found out that Phil's going to shoot you if he's in a bad situation with you. Keep it here because I've got to say, I've made some choices in my life that I'm not proud of, that given a chance I might do differently. And what person hasn't? You know, we've all made choices where we think, maybe we could change that. What would I do differently? And that is just part of being human. Isn't 2020 hindsight a wonderful thing? You know, I mean, I wish I had it for some of the choices I've made, which I would go back and do over. But we can't live with regret. We have to learn something from it. Kind of like I was just talking to Ricky Norwood about, where he, you know, learning from something, from a hard time in your life. Now, my next guest is going to have lots to say about this.
Wham, bam, it's Dr. Pam, up close and very personal.
I'm so delighted to welcome Lady Nadia Essex, the love and dating coach, onto the show. Her website is theagency.limited, and on Twitter, she's Lady Nadia Essex. Hello, Nadia.
Hello.
Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Now, you have been through the ringer. Now, I have to say, when all your story about what led to you leaving Celebs Go Dating, I was thinking at the time, I've spoken to Nadia so many times on radio, and she gives fantastic dating advice. As I always said to you, you're my favorite dating expert besides me.
Yes, of course.
And then I thought, why did Nadia make certain choices? And I was thinking, I wish she'd called me. You know, we could have talked this through. Tell me what happened with when you were leaving Celebs Go Dating, and what came of it? How are you? Because you seem to be a stronger person now.
Yeah, I mean, it was obviously a very difficult time, and I just felt like I'd been sort of quiet about the details that had been going on behind the scenes for a really, really long time.
For Celebs Go Dating, because
For Celebs Go Dating, the way that I was feeling, the way that I feel I was treated, the sort of lack of support that I felt that I got in every aspect from all sides. And it just got to the stage where it was like, you know what, I can't, it's just, I can't do it anymore. You know, I've taken responsibility for my actions. I take full responsibility for my actions. Like you just said, everybody is human. We all make mistakes.
Yeah.
Everybody does things they're not proud of. But ultimately, you know, it was probably the biggest life lesson that I'll look back on as a real chance to wipe the slate clean and start again.
Yes, that's to take that from all, you know, with what you know happened on Twitter with the trolling, and that people, you know, I don't know the exact details, but I know that you, I guess you'd had some fake accounts that you used. And
Well, they weren't fake accounts. I mean, everybody that I know has multiple Twitter accounts. Some for work, some for personal, and they keep them separate. And they use their work, they work Twitter to you know, keep it work related, and they have a personal Twitter account to make it personal. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like I was running around sort of, you know, making up a million different accounts to attack people. I was defending myself against people that were trolling me. So I was getting trolled on a daily basis.
I mean, see, because I've been trolled on Twitter, and but only a couple times, and there's been anonymous accounts, and they were really nasty, and obviously it heard me talking on radio or seen me on TV, so knew certain things that I'd said in public, and had picked up on those, and it was horrible. But it happened a couple of times. Twitter, funny enough, responded fairly quickly and got those accounts deleted. And one thing I decided not to do was I was not going to give them oxygen by tweeting back to them. The temptation, Nadia, was enormous. I wanted to tweet back, you effing this, you effing that, leave me alone, what are you talking about? But I just, if because it only happened a couple of times to me, I was able to manage it. What I hadn't realized with you was that it was this persistent like wave. And so I can kind of now
Daily.
get my head around your reaction to, well, I'm going to troll them back.
Well, I was just defending myself. I was literally getting called. There was an account on Twitter that actually photoshopped a looked like I'd said the tweet of calling him the N-word. Somebody had photoshopped that and put it on Twitter and tagged in Celeb Go Dating, all the press, and made out that I'd written that tweet. And it was absolutely not true. And I, luckily, I obviously complained straight away to Twitter. The account got deleted immediately because they knew it was a Photoshop tweet. That person set up another account within 24 hours, and 24 hours later started saying again, she's a racist, she's a racist, she's a racist, all over my page. Somebody made a SoundCloud music rap video about how much of a cow I am
Gosh.
and tagged me in, tagged the press in, tagged my friends in, sent it to my business website email address. Now, luckily now I'm at a stage where I've completely learnt, like what you have, do not give it oxygen.
Yes, this
Don't
is the thing.
engage. Just the block button is my very best friend. I wish I'd found her sooner because she is my best pal. But I just was so caught up in it. You know, I was so in the moment, just defending myself, arguing with people, trying to like not change their mind, but just trying to defend my reputation, I suppose.
Now, what I'd like to know is so what you would do differently now?
Oh my
Would
God. Well, first of all, like I said, I think I've really started to work on my communication skills, because I think if I'd been able to communicate better how I was really feeling and how it was really affecting me,
Yes.
we would never have been put in that situation, or I certainly would never have been put in that situation in the first place.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have needed to vent because I would have felt I was getting my voice across anyway.
Yeah.
So for me, it's absolutely taking full responsibility of my part to play in being able to communicate with people better, so that I don't come across as this kind of like, oh, you know, she's just, you know, TV presenters, she just wants the show for herself, you know, she's just going to moan and moan, and, you know, she's got an ulterior motive.
yeah.
When actually, I wasn't. I was, you know, I had a cry for help. So,
Yes.
first of all, it's communication. Second of all, absolutely non-engagement with any trolling activity on
You
social
are,
media.
it's just worked for me like a dream. I
Oh.
never reply, as I say, these couple times, and once I had maybe another little bit of trolling, you know,
Yeah.
and I just don't reply, and they do eventually go away,
Yeah, and
you
it
know.
makes me so, when I press that block button, it actually makes me happier
Yeah.
than any reply I have ever written in my entire life. Because the thought of them sitting on social media talking about me, but they're basically talking to themselves because I can't see or hear it.
Yes.
Gives me so much happiness that I'm just, I'm peaceful. I love it.
And the thing, and I'm so glad we're having this chat because it gives me a chance because everybody's using social media. Well, not everybody, but most people are using it. Mm. And you've got to remember that when you're trolled, you'll never win against a troll. Because never. Trolls have some sort of dysfunctional part to their way they relate to the world. You will never, you'll never change
you'll
a
never
troll's
win.
Mind.
You'll never change their mind.
Exactly. You'll never
and that's
win.
That's what I've learned.
Exactly.
Like, I want to change people's mind. I want to change people's perception. And I think I'm a very good negotiator. And so I was there, you know, negotiating and sticking up for myself and defending myself. But these people didn't want to change. They didn't care.
Yeah, no, that's the thing about a troll. They don't care. And they're they're happy with whatever response you give them. They've made you, they say, look at me, look at me. And you've looked at them and you've replied and you've given them some oxygen.
Yeah. It is the single most satisfying thing on the planet to see a negative comment. And my initial instinct is always it stings. You go, oh, it's like a bit of a punch in the gut.
Yes.
And my initial split second, it's like, oh, I'm going to tell you the truth. And then I take a second and take a deep breath, press the block button and carry on with my day. And I've never been happier.
A troll will never accept the truth. They have their own distorted view of the world.
Yeah. So, and they're there to, like you said, in the minute one account got shut down, 24 hours later, another account was open and the same thing happened.
Yeah. And you know, and then you just have to go with the trying to get it shut down and blocking them and whatever. It's a no-win situation taking on these trolls who have a dysfunctional personality. They've got psychological traits that will not respond to normal interaction. Now, so can I, on a happier, lighter note, any dating right now? Is there any man in your life or...
On a happier note, there's no dating and no men, but I'm very happy.
That's great. Happily single.
Yes, very happily single. I think last year was very much about, you know, like building, like learning the lessons.
Yes.
I think this year will be about implementing, you know, the newfound respect for life and being present and being positive, you know, and implementing that to make my life better.
And I love your like I saw your post the other recently where you said, hasn't anybody ever seen a bum that hasn't had a Brazilian bum lift? Because people have commented that you had, I don't know.
I had cellulite on my bottom.
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't? I've got cellulite on my bottom and I run five times a week. I work out hard, baby. And it's still there.
It's like, that's a normal, and it's so funny because, and that's how you know you can't win, because people see a natural bum that's never had any work done, and I get trolled, and then I see people that have had a Brazilian bum lift that has a perfect booty, and they still get trolled because they're like,
exactly,
oh, it's plastic, you're not natural, or you cannot win.
Yes.
So you've just got to go, you know what? This is me.
Yes, and these people don't matter.
It doesn't matter. It really, honestly, I get chills. It doesn't matter. Like, it's so empowering just being like, you know what? This is it. People are going to like it. People aren't going to like it. But you can't let that resonate.
No,
that's really important for me. Don't let it penetrate my brain.
Exactly. Only count, the people who count are the people who love you. That's how I live my life. Now, I know you're on Celebrity Coach Trip recently. Any more shows lined up?
A few things in the pipeline, actually. I suppose 2019 is, like I say, all about being positive. I mean, I love being on telly. I love it.
I love your facial expressions. They make me laugh.
I love doing my job on telly. You know, I love sort of listening. I find people fascinating.
Yes.
And I just love being interactive with them and doing that also on telly and hopefully being able to give a good message. Because I think we've just become, you know, the biggest thing I'm teaching my clients, like real life clients at the moment, is how to flirt. We've lost the art.
Yes, it is a lost art, and there's a lot of we could have a whole other chat about that, darling, about how with the Me Too movement, which is needed and good, but has made people really worried about flirting. But I'm going to love you and leave you and tell people.
Yes, well, thank you.
Yeah, and they can and find you at theagency.limited and on Twitter at Lady Nadia Essex, and you've got your other social media too. And we'll speak soon, darling. Take care.
Thank you so much. Are you lots very, of love. Thanks.
Bye-bye. And thank you see how we can all learn. I mean, there was Ricky Norwood talking about learning from him when he was in the press 5 years ago. Nadia, who's just been in the press. We all learn from life's challenges, and some of which we create ourselves, but we have to pick ourselves up and move forward. You've been listening to Wham Bam. It's Dr. Pam. Join me soon for the next episode. And in the meantime, take care of yourself.
If you have a dating disaster or an awkward issue you'd like Dr. Pam's advice on, visit drpam.co.uk. Drop her a line via the contact page. That's drpam.co.uk. Wham bam, it's Dr. Pam. Up close and very personal.